Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on billions for the bankers, debts for the people, when we come back. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. It's a foreign and alien ideology. Traditional American values are individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. These foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant. We covet our neighbor's property, and we call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures called Federal Reserve notes, and then practice idolatry by signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods that we call government. And we don't get away with these crimes either. We're now paying up to 74% of everything that you and I create and produce in taxes. And we live in mortgaged homes owned by the savings and loan companies. We drive cars that are owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. Now, the average family of four here in the United States has a $70,000 consumer debt. We Americans owe a $7 trillion plus national debt. And then we've underwritten and gone surety for another $44 trillion of unfunded government obligations. And our financial institutions are leveraged out to $60 trillion worldwide. That's called derivatives. And our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme. And then you and I live from paycheck to paycheck, and we're taught to call all of this prosperity. Well, the God of Israel gave us a better way than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way of life. And if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package. Now, it's educational, it's entertaining, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours direct, 417-273-4967. That's the number to call for your free CD package. That's 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? All right, last time we were talking about billions for the bankers. It's a little book written by Sheldon Emery back in 1977. When we finished last time, I read off a list of questions, and I said, have any of these sources reported this information to you? Have the banks, insurance companies, preachers, teachers, service clubs, Republican or Democratic parties reported any of this information to you? Did you hear it on CBS or ABC? Well, I haven't heard a word. You know, I'm an old man now, and I haven't heard a word from any of these institutions or organizations about this robbery that's going on, this second and fifth and eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto being implemented here in America and robbing all of us. And I suppose that if you were in control of CBS or ABC, you'd send word down that they're not to reveal that little secret. After all, that's your golden money tree. Well, now, that was 30 years ago, 1977, almost 30 years ago now, that Sheldon Emery, like John the Baptist standing out here in the wilderness, you know, telling everybody to flee from the wrath to come. Nobody paid any attention in 1977, 87, or 97 that I heard of. Oh, there might be a couple of three iconoclasts out there that paid attention and did something constructive to prevent it from happening to them, but that's few and far between. The average guy says, well, I have to participate because it's the only game in town. I used to think that when I was in the business world, and I woke up one day and I said, no, I think I'll just get the hell out while the getting's good, and I did, and I've been just happy as a clam at high tide. Now, I want to share with you what's going on in the year 2005. Let's bring it up 30 years and take a look at the International Forecaster for April 2005. This is issue number 4. He puts out about 4 newsletters a month. They come out every Saturday. And it's put out by Bob Chapman. And Robert Chapman puts out the International Forecaster. It's $129.95 in U.S. funds. If you want to order a copy, or if you want to go to their webpage, see if they got a webpage here. Yeah, it's called theinternationalforecaster.com. If you can spell all of that, that's theinternationalforecaster.com. That's the website. Now, I recommend all of my students that they subscribe to one of these newsletters, because you're not going to get any information out of Life or Newsweek or U.S. News and World Report or Time Magazine. You're not going to get it there. You're not going to get it from the Republicans or the Democrats or the Communists or the Socialist Workers Party or the NEA or the PTA or any of your labor unions like the AFL or CIO, but you'll get it from the McIlvaney Report. You'll get it from the Mugambo. You'll get it from Robert Chapman. So let's take a look at what Chapman has to say in the April Volume 4 International Forecaster. Speaking of U.S. markets, he says, when it will happen, we don't know. But we do know it will happen, and that is the crash of the dollar. And it won't happen all at once, but in stages. And we've seen the first stage as the dollar dropped 32% over the past 2.5 years. That's a third of its purchasing power has been lost in 2.5 years. You cannot expect the U.S. government, Congress, or corporate America to act to stop this inescapable crisis because they created the condition in the first place. They want America on its financial knees so it will accept world government. Then after an inflationary blow-off, the U.S. dollar index will have broken down to 68 or 70 from its current level in the low 80s. And as that takes place, another war will be created as a diversion so that everyone will be more concerned with the new Selective Service draft and where their sons and daughters are being shipped off to in order to spread democracy and end terrorism. And as we explained in the previous issue, plans for the end of the Bretton Woods system and its replacement with fiat money began in the early 1960s. It ended with the end of the gold reserve-backed currency on August 15, 1971. The other prong in the attack, launched at the same time, was the imposition of free trade and globalization, which would be used as a great leveling process to bring the G7 countries to a level just above the third world, so that out of the chaos everyone would accept this new world government. Well, this year, some of the brighter people not involved with the elitists began to realize something very big and devastating is underway. So a handful of economists began to question the direction in which the United States was headed economically and financially. These kept economists are telling the intelligent a little bit of what is going on, enough to keep them online and sidetracked. This is opposition that is created and controlled, and you will only hear as much as they want you to hear. This has been and has little to do with political parties and much to do with the control of all political parties. The manifestations are myriad and complex and loaded with dialectics. And in this process, few are able to understand what these evil people are up to. And that's why we try to make the cryptic understandable in this newsletter. Now, a good example of an extension of our corrupted government is the attempted theft of Social Security funds to bail out Wall Street and to anoint Wall Street with a cool $1 trillion plus in profits every year. Then there is the almost $3 billion a day that foreigners must spend to buy American assets to keep us financially afloat. The fund's inflow is now not sufficient, and our Treasury and Federal Reserve are buying U.S. Treasuries and agencies in secret offshore accounts with money that they created out of thin air. A simple Ponzi scheme. Some of the players are beginning to get cold feet. Now, you may not want to believe it, but our economy has been in disintegration mode since 1989. And only one trick after another has salvaged it. So just look at the dollar. It is only reflecting the collapse of a once great economy. Soon, the U.S. dollar will cease to be the world's reserve currency. We have major corporations on the verge of bankruptcy. General Motors is a good example. As General Motors goes, so goes America. And what's good for GM is good for America. Its debt will shortly be junk. Its supplier, Delphi, along with GM, is under investigation and will precede GM into bankruptcy. Potential retirees and pensioners are going to be in for a big surprise, like the loss of 65% to 75% of their pensions. General Motors has $50 billion in debt to refinance over the next 20 months. We don't believe the market can or will want to handle that volume of junk debt, junk bonds. The market cannot even handle the Treasury refinancings. That means interest rates have to move, jeopardizing the future of the housing market and complicating and increasing the cost of debt service. There are many more complicating factors that are going to be moving into the forefront in the weeks and months ahead. So prepare yourself. It's going to be a bumpy and difficult journey. Over the last 20 years, the United States has been changed from an industrial nation to a consumer society based on services. This has caused massive amounts of dollars to flood the world. As a result, foreigners are holding massive amounts of United States debt, which has fallen in value over the past 5 years. Asians are the major debt holders, and as we saw recently, any kind of utterance regarding financial diversification brings inordinate pressure on the dollar. Almost every commodity in the world is denominated in dollars, and commodities have been in a bull market for 5 years. During that period, oil went from $10 a barrel to $58 a barrel. Now, that's not only the result of supply and demand to a speculation, but it's also a reflection of the dollar's value. And the axiom is simple. The dollar goes down and commodities go up, particularly gold and silver. Now, due to the systemic financial problems, such as massive debt and free trade, along with globalization, the rot has progressed so far for a quick fix to work. it's too late now. There will have to be a purging of the system. Tremendous efforts will be made at 80 on the dollar index to keep it from total collapse, but that will be to no avail. The dollar's collapse is inevitable now. Thus, that is part of the reason for oil's rise in price and the move in copper from 60 cents a pound to $1.45 a pound, and the 71% increase in the cost of iron ore. The result will be anything made of steel will increase in cost by 50 to 70%, and the worst hit in this category will be autos, trucks, and durable goods. That'll be very inflationary, and it will also affect the sale of these items. Now, you more clearly should see why General Motors and Ford are in so much trouble. One of the disturbing elements of this commodity world, or the commodities world, is that the cartels control most of the world's commodity production. They are the Anglo-American Corporation, BH, Billiton, and Rio Tinto. They virtually control the production of many commodities. They all know that each other very well and constitute a monopoly worldwide. They're also at the top of the elitist pecking order. Industrial raw material prices are what they want them to be, and as you can see, the depreciation of the dollar has greatly affected the price of commodities, but so has the raw materials cartel. Now, we predicted some time ago that if free trade and globalization were allowed to continue, that Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, Quebec, and Ontario would have serious problems. In 2 years, China will be shipping millions of automobiles and trucks into the United States market. Now, that said, we want to talk about General Motors and its problems, because GM is the model for what is to come for many, many other U.S. corporations. And the failure of many U.S. corporations means massive permanent unemployment for the people of our nation. GMAC is called General Motors Acceptance Corporation. It contributes about two-thirds of General Motors' profits. After 3 years of $5,000 rebates per car, which was double the sector average, that is, car and truck sale growth is falling. GMAC's $260 billion debt is larger than all of that of the auto division combined. And as you saw in the last issue, GM's euro bond issues are trading at a yield of over 11%, which is certainly junk bond quality. The moneymaker GMAC is faced with declining vehicle sales and has been a major investor in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac mortgages. So, as interest rates rise and home prices fall, paper quality will come into question and mortgage volume will dry up, especially in cash outs and home equity loans. GMAC is facing a double-edged sword. At General Motors, the most profitable sales unit is the SUV. And with today's gasoline prices, they will suffer sales declines. Sales overall for January and February were off 11%, despite having lowered prices in February. And as you can see, the market is simply saturated with vehicles. General Motors lost $2.6 billion in Europe last year by way of Vauxhall, Saab, and Opel, and is laying off 12,000 workers in Europe. Since 1980, the auto workforce has shrunk by 70% due to deliberate deindustrialization, and of course, thousands of smaller firms supplying the industry have been phased out with massive job losses or jobs transferred to other countries overseas. In 2006, General Motors will either pay off or refinance $44.7 billion in debt, and Ford has to do $37.1 billion. Now, can the market handle that much at junk bond levels, or will they even want to? That could be bonds with a 13 to 14% coupon. Will financial firms such as GMAC continue the hobby of producing cars? We don't think so. Can you see how deadly this offshore production, this outsourcing and free trade and globalization has been for America? Our industrial heartland has been destroyed, past tense. Fundamentally, both General Motors and GMAC are on a path to destruction, as is Ford. Borrowing costs have just jumped from 7.5% to over 11%. Now, can they generate cash at these levels and still make a profit? Delphi, the General Motors parts spinoff, is now embroiled in an Enron-type fraud scandal, which could indirectly reflect on General Motors itself. Delphi has already informed 4,000 of its salaried and retirees that it is ceasing to pay their health care plan. General Motors and Delphi layoffs are over 10,000. Suppliers are already at junk level and can only borrow from GMAC to stay in business. Ford's Visteon is in the same boat, and the United Auto Workers is on a two-tier wage system to save money and to avoid layoffs. If all of that wasn't bad enough, General Motors Pension Fund is now underfunded by $17 billion. Or put another way, it's only funded to 80% of its obligations. Now, this comes as George Bush and the neocons in Washington push pension reform, better called funding your plan. This is another debt bomb, and Washington knows it. If reform passes Congress for the benefit of the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, many companies will achieve junk status. GM wants to split off GMAC, hoping to save the GMAC entity. If that happens this year, it is guaranteed that General Motors will go into bankruptcy. PBGC is already $23 billion in debt and cannot absorb the obligations to General Motors' hundreds of thousands of pensioners. This is a disaster of major proportions. In addition to that, they will lose GM's pension insurance premium payments even if GMAC is spun off. We do not believe they will escape attachment by PBGC, and it should have been spun off 3 years ago. Now, all of this cannot be blamed on General Motors or its management or workers. It is the handiwork of the elitists inside and behind our government. Free trade and globalization has been a deliberate disaster for our country, just as our fiat dollar has been. And if you Americans do not get your elected representatives to kill free trade and to erect tariffs, we're all doomed to third world status. Now, General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler all face the same problem, and that problem is that they cannot compete against slave labor and free trade. In China, an auto production worker makes 75 cents an hour. In Detroit, that same auto worker under union contract makes $25 an hour. New employees in similar jobs make $14 an hour, and anyone in their right mind knows every manufacturing job that is left in the United States is now in jeopardy. In the direction that we're headed under free trade and globalization, there will be no jobs left in America. Every time we read one of these newsletters by conservatives that espouse free trade, we want to puke. They just don't get it. How very, very stupid. I just read one the other day, the author whom I've known for 25 years, who quotes the Council on Foreign Relations and Foreign Affairs and says, this is the way things are going and you have to go with the flow. This is another writer who is a complete sellout so that he can make money. Of course, he's frequently on CNBC. What else? He knows what the problems are, but being accepted is more important than telling his subscribers the truth about the economy and the truth about our government. It's no wonder that these elitist creeps have no trouble controlling the masses with pukes like this misinforming the public. There's nothing that bothers us more than enemies who pose as friends within our own camp. And Mexico is on the ropes. Mexico cannot compete anymore at a pay scale of 150 an hour. China has Mexico totally stymied. The problem we face is not only the jobs in the auto industry, but also jobs all over the country in every one of our factories. And after these workers lose their jobs, if they're lucky, they can get another job making $7 to $10 an hour. They cannot live on such wages after taxes, never mind pay for health insurance or plan for retirement. Our workers are being pauperized. Their wages are at rock bottom. In addition to outsourcing and the movement of production to foreign lands, we have 20 million illegal aliens who work for $4 to $6 an hour. How can we possibly compete with that? Our government in Washington is doing everything possible to expedite the destruction of our economy and the ultimate destruction of our nation. They're not only destroying our production base and our service base, but our ability to defend ourselves if attacked by a foreign nation. In addition, as the job pay levels are lowered, so are tax revenues, which sink our nation deeper into debt. We're subsidizing our competition in this giant foreign aid program and then destroying our country in the process. All we can say is what William Bendix used to say, what a revolting development this has turned out to be. Well, I might add a little editorial comment here. Remember, 1977, Sheldon Emery wrote a little book called Billions for the Bankers and Debts for the People. So we covered that, and that's precisely what we see coming to fruition now in the year 2005, 30 years later. And it's not that you're going to stop it or that I'm going to stop it. The best you can do when you're riding on the Titanic, after it hits the iceberg, your number one job is to save yourself. You're not going to save the ship, and you're not going to save the people that are on it. And if you can save yourself, you'll be doing a big job. And that's where we are here in the United States. If you can save yourself out of this mess, you'll be doing a big job. You can forget about saving America, and you can forget about saving Indiana or California. You can forget about saving the AFL and the CIO. That isn't going to happen. Millions of people are being caught up in this financial or economic malaise, and if you can save yourself out of it, get after it. Now let's take a look at some individual events that are going on around the country. Such as the population in Los Angeles County this past year saw 118,000 tax-paying citizens leave Los Angeles County, and they were replaced by 98,000 illegal aliens. The Golden State is no longer golden as the tax base slips into oblivion. Now, we've had thousands of emails and letters asking, when will real estate top out? It should be soon, or it may already have begun. Last year, mortgage debt increased by $995 billion. Just a shade under $1 trillion. Since 2001, $3 trillion in mortgages have been refinanced. The average house is up 50% over the past 5 years in price, but incomes have gone nowhere. Instead, corporate bottom lines have been flattened and fattened with income under pressure from outsourcing and illegal immigration. And as you know, Americans do not save any longer, and they're up to their eyeballs in debt. But that's okay. Foreigners are saving us. Foreigners are saving for us, and they lend us $2.9 billion a day to stay afloat. Now let's think about that for a moment. All the housing in America, for practical purposes, has been refinanced. And the people have taken their equities out and bought a new SUV right at the time when gasoline is moving up to $2.50 a gallon. Hey, that wasn't such a good move, was it? Now, refinancing your house to take the interest rate from 8% down to 5% makes all the sense in the world. But taking equity out of your house or buying into this real estate bubble doesn't make any sense. Remember, the bankers are going to foreclose on your house when you can't make the payments. Now, the worst place that you can be is when you've got a big equity in a house. That is, you got a $300,000 house now. That's really a $30,000 house by 1970 standards, but it's worth $300,000 now, and you've got a $50,000 mortgage on it. You lose your job and can't make the payments. You're going to lose your $250,000 equity, aren't you? Mull that one over a little bit. So as we said earlier, we do not believe China will revalue, and there is a good chance of a trade war. Higher interest rates and dollar selling will sap liquidity, even if the Fed increases bank loans. ABS, M3, and commercial paper are all 15 to 20%. If bonds and stocks and real estate are going down, a lot of that excess liquidity will be eaten up by way of losses. You will lose money in bonds, you'll lose lots of money in stocks and real estate, and the alternatives are money market funds, bonds of short duration, and gold and silver shares and coins. This is the beginning of the global meltdown caused by a deliberate unbalancing, and there's no way back. Well, that didn't sound like very good news, but hang on. Let's take our midway break here, and let me give you a couple of caveats and a little information. You're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967 or go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And one last item here. Remember that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management or staff of the network or radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember the website georgegordon.org or call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing the April, the number 4. This is the International Forecaster, comes out once a week, published on Saturday. This is the April 2005, number 4, volume 9, number 4-4. This is Robert Chapman. If you'd like to order a copy, you can go to theinternationalforecaster.com. That's the webpage. Theinternationalforecaster.com. The mailing address, post office box 510-518, Punta Gorda, Florida, 33951. It's $129.95 a year. Now you get 52 copies or 52 issues a year. This week's issue is 32 pages, and he covers news and international events, markets, forecasts, editorial opinion, news. I think the $129.95 minutes is about what you're going to be paying for a couple of newspapers. And remember, these people give you information that you can't get from Time or Life or Newsweek, U.S. News and World Report, and so on. Listen to this. As we discussed in the past issue, the trade numbers were deplorable. The annualized February numbers are a deficit of 6% of GDP. That's up from 4.8% a year earlier. Now, the trade deficit, for those of you that are maybe new at this, the United States buys oil from other countries around the world, and we have to pay for that oil, and we pay for it in dollars. And we have to buy shoes. Our shoe industry has been removed from the United States to other countries in the world. And so we don't produce shoes here in the United States. We buy those shoes from China, Japan, or somebody else. Textiles, that's another thing. We used to be a great shoemaking country, a great oil exporting country. We used to be a country that exported textiles. Today we import textiles. are clothes. Just take a look at the clothes that you buy, and you'll see that they're made in Indonesia, Thailand, the Philippines, or someplace else. Now, the theory is that we sell $1 billion worth of computer chips and Caterpillar tractors around the world, and then we use that money and we buy shoes and shirts and oil from other countries around the world, and that's supposed to balance. And indeed, it used to balance in this country, but then once in a while you'd get a little imbalance. You know, maybe one year we'd be $10 billion short of balancing our accounts, and then the year following maybe we'd have $10 or $15 billion surplus, and that would cancel out last year's shortfall, and so on. That used to be pretty normal. But now, over the last 5 years, our trade balance has been running around $100 billion a year. Then it grew to $200 billion, and then $400 billion, and last year it was $600 billion. And it's on track to run around $700 or $800 billion this year. That means that we're buying about $500 billion a year more than we're selling. That's not very good. If you were running a business that was running in the red by, you know, $50,000 a year, you can do that for a year or 2 years or 3 or 5 years until you've eaten up your equity. At some point in time, like General Motors is a big corporation, but when they get a $300 billion debt and they don't have $300 billion worth of assets to cover that, that's what we call being insolvent. And that's where America is today. America is insolvent, unable to pay our debts, unable to pay our bills. And so when we look at numbers like this, as we discussed in the last issue of the trade numbers, were deplorable. Annualized February's numbers are a deficit of 6% of our gross domestic product. Now the GDP is running at about $11 trillion a year. Well, 6% of that is a trade deficit. And the current account deficit was 6.6% of GDP in the first quarter versus a year earlier. The higher the numbers go, the worse will be the ultimate correction when it comes. Personal consumption is 72% of the GDP. Now, that's up from 25-year norm of 6.7%. Now, 25 years ago, our consumption was 6.7% of the GDP. Today, it's up to 72%. Now, I heard a lady the other day, she was pretty excited, and she says, bring them on. I love Walmart. She likes to go shopping at Walmart every day. And that's a great thought, because Walmart is bringing in these cheap imports from China. You know, shoes that are manufactured in China with 14 to 60 cent an hour labor, and then sold in Walmart stores. Makes great profit for Walmart, and it makes great savings for you. No doubt about it. Now, here's the problem. You see, at some point in time, that $600 billion a year has to be paid. Has to be paid. And I'm not sure that the average Joe Sixpack American understands that if that isn't paid, then you see what happened, or you saw what happened to Argentina about 3 years ago when they couldn't make their balance of payments trade, when they couldn't meet their obligations, they couldn't pay their bills. Well, when nations become insolvent, they go on a cash basis. And there's a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. That's what happens. And that's what's been going on down in Argentina. Now, the people in Argentina are still living there. They're still, you know, they didn't die. They didn't, you know, when their economy tanked, they didn't all die. They didn't all jump out of tall buildings. But they all took a hit, and they all lost a lot of property. And their property that they owned 5 years ago is now owned by somebody else. Now, that's what we have to look forward to. And that's what these newsletter writers, guys like Bob Shackman, are trying to tell you. Now, as we progress along in the newsletter, he's going to say you need to be long on gold and silver, and you need to be short on stocks and bonds. And, of course, people in the investment world have already done that. People that are investing in the stock market are novices. Novices. Now, somebody's going to say, oh, my God, there's people, you know, that have lots of money, like Donald Trump. Oh, no. I'll bet you that Donald Trump doesn't have any money in the stock market. That guy's no dummy. And people that are in the know, that invest and make money, they make money off of Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. They don't go out there and squander and waste their money. Now, this guy, Warren Buffett, a couple of years ago, he bought, I've forgotten exactly how much, but I think it was around $100 million worth of silver and stashed it over in England. $100 million, I think, was the number of, or that was a million ounces or 100 million ounces, I don't remember exactly. But it was a truckload or two of silver. And this guy Buffett, you know, he said, listen, you want to get out of dollar-denominated assets. The big guys that you don't hear about, that nobody's telling you about, they're not in dollars. They're not in stocks and bonds. They're not out here buying General Motors. So it should send a signal to the rest of us that, hey, why are we in stocks and bonds, and why are we investing in these markets? Chapman's got more to say about these markets. The problem lies with the low interest rates and an unbelievably easy money policy by the Fed, plus the creation of foreign currencies to buy U.S. assets to keep those currencies cheap. The only way to throttle and purge the system is to dramatically raise interest rates. What you're seeing is the worst monetary problems in 200 years in America, and all those countries are simply compounding the problem. Paul Volcker is being allowed to speak out, and we had best listen. Paul Volcker is advocating that, or what he was forced to do in the early 1980s. We believe his comments are a forerunner to the real thing again. Now, even if housing prices fall, they will not show up in the CPI, that's the Consumer Price Index, unless the BLS, that's the Bureau of Labor Statistics, changes its formula. You see, the Bureau of Labor Statistics has been using equivalent homeowner rent since 1997, which accounts for 23% of the CPI. Now, what that translates to is the CPI would be overstated and GDP understated after an inflationary blow-off. Broad-based deflation would follow. Now, here's what he's telling you. The Bureau of Labor Statistics comes up with numbers. The books have been cooked, and the numbers are incorrect. And if you follow those numbers, you'll lose your ass. That's the bottom line. So don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. If that's what you want to invest in, you certainly have a right to invest in stocks and bonds and all the thingies out there that people like to invest in and believe that things are just roasty-toasty and up and away. But now, I was talking to a guy the other day, and the value of their house has gone, the guy's actually got three houses. The value of the three houses has gone up 50% over the last 3 years. They live in Phoenix, Arizona. All three houses are mortgaged. So here's a guy with a $100,000 house. In fact, he's got three of them. And the value of their houses have gone up 50%. And so he's got $300,000 worth of houses, and his three houses went up by 50%. My goodness. He made $150,000, didn't he? Now, if he would sell two of those houses and free and clear the third house over there, he'd be sitting pretty because he'd have his house bought and paid for, free and clear. When he loses his job, he's not going to lose his house. But he doesn't want to sell the three houses because he believes that the three houses are going to go up another 50% over the next 5 years. And if he's right, he's going to make a bundle of money, isn't he? But if he's wrong, he's going to lose his ass, isn't he? And that's what gambling's all about. Now, in business, we never gamble. You always take your money off the table when you've made a good profit. Keep pulling your money off the table and never leave your money in your business, because business is not the place to store your wealth. And people that store their wealth in their business ultimately lose it, just like a gambler who continually stores his wealth on the crap table. Ultimately, he loses it all. Now, China has a six-month window to revalue the yuan. The Senate, by a vote of 67 to 33, allowed consideration of a bill that would impose tariffs of 27.5% on all Chinese imports if China does not revalue. Thus, in October, we could have sanctions, inasmuch as I do not believe the Chinese will willingly revalue. Now, that's an interesting concept, because the Chinese hold, I think the numbers are around $200 or $300 billion worth of American debt. Bonds, you know, our treasury bills and bonds. And they keep buying more and more of those. Remember, we need about $3 billion a day to pay our bills. We're borrowing that much every day, $3 billion a day. Now, what happens next October if we tell the Chinese, we're gonna sock you with 27% tariffs, and the Chinese say, well, good, we're not going to finance your debt anymore, and by the way, cash us out. Well, I don't know what's going to happen there, but it just doesn't make sense to me that you're going to go to your creditor. You know, I've been in the business world for a long time, and I might not like something that the bank is doing. But you know, you go to the bank and you get in their face, and they're liable to call your note and tell you, we're not going to lend anymore to you. Now, the debtor is not in a very good position to go to the creditor. China is the creditor. We're the debtor. And to tell them, this is where the bear does it. Now, do you? So next October, that's going to be pretty interesting. I kind of suspect that the United States will back down. That's just my gut reaction. In 2004, housing debt increased 13%, or about $885 billion. 16% of America's real falling disposable income went into debt service, and two-thirds of that was mortgage-related. This in spite of a mortgage interest rate average of 5.84%, so that's under 6%, which is only 61% of the 35-year average of 9.5%. So over the past 35 years, interest rates have been around 9.5%. Today, they're down to 6%. We have a question. If Congress is to roll back the participation of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in mortgage securities, they now hold 72% of mortgages by way of guarantee, and who or what is going to replace Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae? Banks and mortgage companies might pick up 40 to 50% of the best loans. But who's going to pick up all of the bad loans, the bad credit? You see, without that quasi-government participation, nobody else will. So that means subpar loans will be a thing of the past. Liquidity will diminish and prices will fall. And what will Fannie and Freddie and other lenders do with the 30% of housing stock that they're going to be sitting on due to failure to pay or bankruptcy? Well, they'll have to sell it, won't they? And of course, they'll have to sell it at bargain basement prices. So all of those interest-only ARMs and subpar loans will have returned to haunt the lenders. Now, we talked about it 2 weeks ago, but in case you missed it, there was a 50% increase in home mortgage foreclosures from February to March, with increases in 47 of 50 states. Now, what do you think that can mean? The probability is that the upward run of housing prices is over. Prices have already topped in some areas, and if you're going to be a seller, this is the time to sell. In October, the slide downward in prices will begin in a big way. If $3 trillion in home refinancing since 2001 has contributed more than 20% to our GDP every year, what do you think is going to happen to the economy when that 20% disappears? That means smaller gross domestic product, less consumption, higher unemployment, and when this happens, the massive foreign inflows will end as interest rates rise. 2006 and 2007 will be bubble-popping years, so get your house in order. This correction will be worse and closer to home than the 2000 stock debacle and the housing slide in the 1989 to 1992 period. Next year, the fat lady sings. Now, you know, people say, well, real estate always goes up. No, it doesn't. It didn't from 89 to 92. It didn't from 71 to 76. It didn't from 79 to 82. You know, I'm an old-timey real estate man. I've been around real estate for a long time. I've seen what happens when the banks stop lending. It's the way the cookie crumbles, they say. I'm an old-timey general contractor, and I know how the banks are. I've dealt with the banks for many years. I know how that game is played. And there's a lot of money to be made, but the money isn't made over the long haul staying in the game. Now's the time to get out. We're headed toward another 1929 to 37 collapse. We're going into the New World Order, and it's an engineered and rigged program. So be alerted to it, and then let's see if you can't save some of your equity or some of your assets out of it. In 2004, housing debt increased 13%. Housing debt increased 13%. And that was last year. Americans are mortgaging everything that they've got, and the bottom line is they're consuming that to maintain their standard of living, hoping that things are going to get better in the future. They're not. They're going to get worse in the future. Our economy is a Ponzi scheme. Nothing's getting better. Nothing's going to get worked out. It's going to get worse and worse. As the bow of the ship sinks lower in the water comes into the ship faster and faster. Now, as American oil companies' profits rise by unconscionable amounts and as the economy suffers, the House of Representatives this past week began consideration of $8 billion in tax breaks for the energy industry. The robbers of corporate America are ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, and Chevron Texaco, and all others that supply gasoline to Americans. They're taking us to the cleaners. As oil prices fell from $58 a barrel to close to $50 a barrel, gasoline prices fell one penny. Now, who are these people kidding? Instead of gasoline selling for $2.59 a gallon, if the price drops by $8 a barrel, it should be selling for $1.90 a gallon. So this bill in Congress is just another example of Republicans in Congress overreaching for the elitist corporate interests. In the bill, there is no tax breaks for hybrid cars, wind energy production, and other efficiency and renewable energy items. Unfortunately, this is how our country is being run today, and we thought you'd like to know what your government was doing to you in the name of these elitist benefits for corporate America. So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to go out here and change the oil company's practice or policies. And I'm not going to get the price of gasoline from $2.59 a gallon to $1.90. That isn't going to happen. But by the same token, I don't have to lose my shirt in some of these crazy investment schemes like stocks and bonds and Social Security and income tax. And neither do you. So you might be thinking about what are you going to do to save your own ship. On Tuesday morning, the Fed added $4.25 billion in repurchase agreements, taking the repo pool to about $67 billion. The Fed is allowing the Dow to trade lower. The media, Wall Street, our accretions in Washington and CNBC tell us that our recovery will go on forever. And as you know, this is all claptrap. We have just witnessed the biggest injection of monetary aggregates into the American economy in our history. And yet, by comparison, this was a very weak recovery. Low interest rates boosted consumerism and asset prices, fostered a bear market rally, but have done absolutely nothing to help unemployment. Now, how can it help unemployment when we're shipping the jobs out of our country to China and Taiwan? Salaries and wage increases are pitiful, and the net loss in purchasing power is terrible. Even business and industry has not adequately invested capital in new plant and equipment and research. Some residential, building and government spending soared, but created structural imbalances. Nobody has any savings in America anymore, and almost everyone is in debt. Wait until government cuts the budget deficit and the Fed finally has to stop creating money. And it's going to be every man for himself, and you'd best be out of debt and into gold and silver assets or something, like wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. We now believe the economy is sputtering and that negative structural effects are overtaking the bubble effect. For the next couple of years, consumer prices will probably jump 10 to 15% as demand starts to contract. That'll send the Fed on another spending spree, which will give us higher inflation than we experienced in 1980. Officially, at that time, it was 13.5%, while interest rates hit 21%. From 2000 to 2004, consumer spending rose 27% on durable goods, 25% on residential building, and 14% by the government. Now that's 123% of real GDP, if you believe the GDP numbers. So the spending will continue as prices rise and eventually just stop. The bottom line here is, our financial system is really one gigantic credit and debt bubble. And in the last 5 years, credit expansion and monetary growth is well over $10 trillion, whereas nominal GDP growth was 2%. Now this is hyperinflation at its finest, and these goons in Washington and on Wall Street expect us to believe inflation is 2.4%. They're finally losing credibility, and that's why George Bush has a 45% approval rating, the worst ever. Now, no one believes their lies anymore, and let this be a warning. Next year is going to be a tough year. Now, General Motors' first quarter loss was $1.1 billion as auto sales fell. They're negotiating with their union to reduce the $5.6 billion that it expects to pay for employees' health costs just this year. And they're blaming their problems on health care costs, but that's just part of the problem. And here's another one. On Wednesday, we saw this headline on Newsmax.com. Are the feds lying about inflation? Housing starts plunge. Is the boom ending? This is the first time we've seen such headlines in the major mainstream press. Tuck that one away. We're just about out of time. I'll have to leave it right here. We'll come back and take a look at this. We're talking about billions for the bankers and debts for you. Debts for the people. It's a book written by Sheldon Emery back in 1977. So this time we took a look. This is exactly what Sheldon Emery was talking about in 1977. He said, here's what's coming. And sure enough, here it is. And the conservative newsletter writers, you know, the Don McElvaines and the Bob Chapmans and Franklin Sanders, these guys have been beating the gong and telling us about this now for the last 30 years. Nobody's been paying attention, but next year, Chapman says, the fat lady sings. All right. I got to wrap it up right here. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Well, there's the signal. Says our time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, God willing. Same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.